In today's episode of Backpacker Radio, we're joined by Justin Helmkamp, aka Two Taps, who was kind enough to extend his layover in Denver to record this show. We chat about his flip-flop through hike of the AT, his hike on New Zealand's Te Arora, which is not how you say it, but I'm going to go with it anyways, and his work as a wilderness therapist. We do a patent pending, and we commence the all-important Chaunce Don't Chafe hashtag. But first, if you've listened to Backpacker Radio, you know that both Chaunce and I are big fans of Gossamer Gear, manufacturers of lightweight backpacking gear and accessories. Their packs carry comfortably, their roomy shelters protect in harsh weather conditions, and their trekking poles are some of the lightest on the planet. Gossamer Gear is changing the perception of delicate, ultralight gear. Chaunce and I are both users of Gossamer Gear's packs and shelters. I used the Gorilla, their 40-liter pack, on the PCT a couple years ago, and will be using their new model on some hikes this year. I also use a handful of their accessories, including the smartphone shoulder strap pocket, which makes it very convenient to just grab your phone to snap a picture, check gut hook, etc. Chaunce is out on the AT right now, and she's rocking Gossamer Gear's The One Shelter. The One is both roomy and light. It comes in at less than a pound and a half. It's the one you need, as you know. Listeners of Backpacker Radio can score an exclusive deal on Gossamer Gear products. Use discount code TREK15 for 15% off your cart at gossamergear.com, which is valid for a limited time only. Again, that's TREK15 for 15% off. Get it. Also, we want to give a shout out to Sawyer Products. Today, I want to remind you guys about their permethrin fabric treatment, which is highly effective against deer ticks. Unfortunately, Lyme disease is all too common in the United States, especially in the Mid-Atlantic and New England regions. You want to do everything in your power to reduce your risk of contracting this bacterium. When a tick comes in contact with a fabric treated with permethrin, the fucker will either be repelled or, hopefully, murdered. Sawyer's permethrin fabric treatment is an odorless after drying fabric treatment that does not harm any fabrics or finishes. It repels and kills mosquitoes and ticks for 6 weeks or 6 washes. To apply, spray permethrin directly on the clothing and gear with a slow sweeping motion, keeping the bottle about 6 to 8 inches away and treating each side of the garment for about 30 seconds. Allow to dry for 2 hours before use to maximize the insect repellent's effectiveness and longevity. 4 hours in very humid locations. It can be applied directly to your four-legged friend for protection from mosquitoes and fleas for 35 days and from ticks for 6 weeks. Official application instructions at sawyer.com/dogs. You can find Sawyer's permethrin fabric treatment at your local outfitter, REI, or sawyer.com. Okay, let's do this. Backpacker Radio, presented by The Trek. We're here recording at Wayfinder in the Santa Fe district of Denver, Colorado. This is going to be our last ATFAQ with Chaunce.
That's right.
And the little bit of conversation we just had, I think she's out of questions, which means that she's ready to go. You've timed this. You're ready to hit the trail. And I think even more interestingly, by the time people hear this, you will be on the trail.
12 days left.
Damn. So I have a question, AT question for you. How are you feeling about Pennsylvania?
I don't think I've put any like thought specifically into Pennsylvania as opposed to any other state. Like, I know it's going to suck. I know there's like the rocks and all that stuff.
It's mostly just the rocks.
Yeah, I know. But I get to New York right after that. So I think I'll just be excited to like be getting home.
Yeah.
And like seeing friends and, you know, sleeping in my bed that...
And seeing Sarah,
of course, that it'll help the suck a bit because it's like literally just after.
So lesson learned, everyone. Have a mom in New York.
Yeah.
And Pennsylvania will just fly by.
Just like make your parents relocate. It's really not a big deal. If they tell you it is, they're probably lying to you.
Yeah. So as I said, there's a good chance by the time that you hear this.
I was wondering why you wrote that. I didn't read it as a pun.
Yeah. No, I intentionally punned myself there.
Got it.
Pat on the back. That by the time you hear this, obviously Chaunce will be on the AT. A couple of things that we should touch on about the format of the show is, one, the frequency is not going to change. Two, Chaunce will still be involved with many of the shows. We still haven't determined what number it will be, but when possible, we're going to get Chaunce involved with the show. I'll be going out to Trail Days
She'll be coming back out here once, and she'll basically just be flying down the trail because she can't wait to get back on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm going to be so fast. Yeah. It's going to be unreal how fast I'm going.
Yeah. Chance is going to be your co-host when she returns, and she'll have some good stories. And we can also make a drinking game for when she references the AT. You guys are about to get very drunk.
You would just love that, wouldn't you?
I mean, I've been on an island over here.
I know. It's been really nice.
Yeah.
I'm still making shirts.
On PBR Island. Okay. I'll buy the shirt.
Okay.
The only way that Chance won't be on the show at the end is if she dies. So, yeah. You know.
My coworker today told me not to get eaten by a bear or murdered. And I told her, I think the second one.
I mean, there's a lot more ways to die. You do right. realize.
She was really concerned of the bear, and I told her, I think the murder is probably more likely.
Yeah.
So.
Justin, what ways do you think that she could die
which
on
ways,
trail?
Oh, new segment. What ways can I die on trail?
Ooh,
death with Chance.
Death with Chance.
What haven't I considered yet?
Pennsylvania. You know.
I heard there's rattlesnakes there. I could get bit.
Lots of rattlesnakes.
Yeah. Imagine that was how I went.
Don't be listening to Backpacker Radio when you're in Pennsylvania. Or if you do, have one earbud out because there's snakes and you need to hear them so you don't step on them.
Oh, here's a good question. What other snakes do I have to be? What animals do I have to be worried about? There's my question.
Worried about? Honestly, none of them.
Not like worried about like that are actually going to get me, but like how I worry about like snakes because they're gross and I hate them.
Yeah. A relevant conversation I've had with Andrew Downs recently. He wants to get more into the bear storage conversation.
I know. He asked me if I was bringing a bear can and I said no.
Yeah. Because bear cans are not required. It is a kind of a weird time because bear interactions are becoming more prominent on the AT, but bear canisters suck. So if you're not required to carry them, you know, most thru hikers are not going to carry them. So that's as far down that rabbit hole as I really want to go right
now.
Was
that your whole Andrew Downs bear storage conversation?
Just that it's a topic that the ATC would like to further impress upon people. And I think it's probably something that should be explored. I don't know the data. I've heard a lot of anecdotal stories, which is not a good scientific way to go about regulating something. But that's why we're going to get Andrew back on the show. Actually, maybe when you're back out here for Outdoor Retailer.
Sweet.
Cool. Without any further ado, let's just jump right into today's interview with Justin Helmkamp.
Pretty close.
No, tell me what it is.
Helmkamp.
Helmkamp.
Yep.
That sounded exactly the same to me.
Yeah, same. I think I said it right. Yeah. Let's round up and say I said it correctly. What's your trail name?
Two Taps.
Two Taps. How'd you get that?
Actually on the AT back in 2016.
Drink.
Yeah. AT 2016, I think it was like day five. And because I was really smart and I knew exactly what I was doing, I decided to start at Springer Mountain in June. Which, damn. You know, if you've ever been to Georgia in June, it sucks because, you know, you're just drenched all the time from sweat. And so day five, I was having a really tough time.
Were you aware of how miserable it was going to be?
I was kind of oblivious. Like, I'd been working at a summer camp, and I was like, yeah, it's summertime. You know, I'm used to being outside in the summer all the time. You know, it's whatever before. And yeah, and then you get to Georgia, and it's just like the humidity is incredible. Yeah. I didn't really prepare in that sense. Maybe I should have a little bit better.
Actually, quick tangent. Now I do have an AT question for John. This is really bad form, but I'm going there anyways.
Go for it.
Do you have an anti-chafing strategy? Because I know you said you're not a big...
I don't chafe.
You also, primarily your backpacking experiences through Colorado and the Pacific Crest Trail, where it's very dry. You're about to go into the land of humidity.
If I chafe, I'll come up with a chafing solution. Ooh, until that day comes... Or living life on the edge.
Hashtag Chance don't chafe. All right, back to two taps.
Please start that.
Hashtag Chance don't chafe. Make it happen, people.
Doesn't even sound good.
It sounds wonderful.
Hot, chafing, awful. Yeah, Georgia, woo. So day five, going up, I think it was Tray Mountain, for those of you that have done the AT or know that area. And I'm like halfway up, maybe. And I've just had it, and I'm hiking with a guy, and I take my trekking pole, and I just whack a blaze on a tree twice with some vigor. And he comes over, he's like, what'd you do that for, man? You know, what's going on? I was like, I'm telling this stupid trail that I'm sick and tired of it, and it will not beat me. And so... moving on further down the trail, anytime I started getting mad, I started whacking blazes, you know, just being like, I'm still here, trail, haven't beat me, screw you. And then, you know, further along you get happier about being on trail, it gets easier, that sort of stuff. And eventually now it's kind of turned into, you know, not every blaze or every trail marker, but sometimes we'll give them, you know, a couple taps to be like, hey, trail,
Happy Taps now.
Happy Taps.
Happy Taps.
Yeah. How many trekking poles have you broken in the process?
I never broke trekking poles hitting a tree, actually.
But so. you have broke trekking poles.
So were they strong trekking poles, or were they light taps?
I was using carbon fiber from, it was like this off-brand company back in 2016. I don't know. I felt I hit them pretty good. Like, I was not in the happiest of moments.
That's a good endorsement for whatever brand it is.
Do you have Java's snap a carbon trekking pole?
Yeah, I've seen him do it a bunch of times. There's a lot of force behind those.
Oh, are there?
And
more than like a tree
and
hit?
He puts his arms down very angrily.
He's aggressively?
Like a, he's like a grizzly moving through the trail. So, Two Taps, let us know a little bit more about your backpacking resume.
My first backpacking trip ever was the Appalachian Trail in 2016. You know, just don't really know why, just kind of went for it.
Good starter trail.
Yeah. I actually almost didn't end up finishing it because I got up to Buena Vista, mile 806 or so, and was like just had it with summer in the south. I was so dehydrated. I remember calling my mom, and I thought I made sense on the phone, but apparently I learned out later I was like slurring words and didn't like she didn't really understand what I was saying, so maybe borderline heat exhaustion.
Yeah. So at what point were, if you said you started on June 8th?
June 5th.
June 5th.
Yeah.
At what point did you get up to, is it Buena Vista? Because I know.
I was told Buena Vista.
Okay.
I was told you have to say a little bit of a redneck.
Well, because there's a Buena Vista in Colorado. I think it's just Buena Vista. It's like as murdered as possible.
Yeah. But. Yeah. I was just told to say it like you're a redneck.
Yeah, okay.
And it's stereotypical redneck, and that's what it is.
Yeah, sure. So at what point did you get to, what time of the year was it when you were in Northern Virginia?
That was July 25th.
Damn.
So June 5th, July 25th, it was like 800 miles. I got off trail, went back to see family in Wisconsin, and I was home for like 3 days. You know, I wasn't quite sure if I was actually going to finish. I was like, nah, you got to go back and finish what you started. But obviously, don't go back to Virginia right now.
Yeah.
So I ended up going and doing a flip-flop and went up to Katahdin. Started south from Katahdin August 9th. And then went back to Buena Vista and finished October 30th.
It's actually a good time to be at that portion of the trail.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Late season Sobo is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what was the date that you finished the flip-flop?
October 30th.
October 30th.
Yeah. And it was really cool because, like, you know, people finish on Katahdin, but I think I also had, like, a really cool finish because I walked down to the road. My parents were there waiting. And it was
that's
really
cool
to, like,
nice.
Have my parents involved in it. So that was fun.
So for the last stretches of the hike, were you running into many hikers?
Not really. I mean, you'd get day hikers. It was kind of, you know, quieting down for the Sobos. It would be like you'd see a couple Sobos here and there, you know, small groups like three or four people. But, you know, I would hike with the group for a couple of days, get ahead, you know, find another group, hike for a couple of days, that sort of thing. Basically from the whites on down. So, yeah.
I'm dominating again. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
At what point did you encounter the bubble? Because you started at Katahdin before most thru-hikers have finished, so you probably crossed paths with them where?
Yeah, I would say the most times I saw northbounders were mid and southern Maine through the whites. By the time I hit Vermont, they were pretty much done, though.
So starting in June and finishing in Virginia in October, I imagine you've spent a lot of the trail not encountering a ton of hikers.
No, and it's really funny because, you know, I say I had a more social hike on the PCT than I did on the AT, which most people are like, that's
impossible.
Backwards.
Yeah. Right. So in your experience on that trail, did you enjoy the more isolated portions of the trail or when you were encountering through hikers? Obviously, the interactions were probably fleeting because you're just passing, but
yeah it was cool because, you know, I was sort of getting into the realm of Instagram and I was following a bunch of northbounders in 2016 and I'd pass them, be like, you know, you'd see people that are out there. It was really cool. But with the Sobos, it was cool because I found a really cool crew of people that I hiked with for a little bit. You know, bounced back and forth from I saw them in the whites. I got ahead for a bit, met up again in Vermont, and then I got ahead a bit, met up in southern Pennsylvania, you know, that sort of stuff. But for the most part, it was hiking alone a lot on the Sobo portion, which was cool. You know, I kind of dig it. So
yeah.
I like hiking alone for the most part, but I like camping with people. And at least on the AT, pretty much any time of the year you're out there, there's people around. Like I think I had 10 nights alone on the AT.
Yeah,
so
sure.
It wasn't that many.
Yeah. A lot of weekend warriors, just Boy Scout troops out
there. Yeah, tons of Boy Scout troops.
Yeah.
You done now?
Actually, no.
Sorry. AT Monopoly.
Mostly because we interrupted him on his backpacking resume.
I know. Okay. I've just been sitting here watching.
Trance is a spectator.
You've been doing really good at the follow-up questions. That's the thing.
You know, get one negative comment and then it's all downhill from
off
there.
Off the rails.
So backpacking resume.
Yeah. So yeah, AT 2016. And then went back to the PCT in 2017. Northbounds all the way through. And then... 2018 has been like the year of section hikes. I did like
your retweet.
Yeah, I did like 100 miles on the Arizona Trail. I did 100 miles on the Oregon Desert Trail. Hit the fire sections that I had to skip on the PCT, so got those cleaned up. And then spent a lot of time in North Cascades and Olympic Peninsula out in Washington. So, yeah, 2018 was all about the section hikes, which was really cool. And then yeah, just got back from. Doing the South Island of the Te Araroa in New Zealand.
So wait, can you say that again?
Te Araroa.
One more time.
Te Araroa.
Damn. I don't know if I can imitate that noise.
No, I definitely can't.
You got a little bit of like the tongue roll, like that thing.
I don't think I can do that.
Yeah, Te Araroa.
For the longest time, I've been wanting to know how to say it because I've just been saying Aurora, knowing I'm
saying
Aurora it incorrectly.
Too.
Yeah, shout out to Hiccup. PCT 2018er who made me practice that for, I don't know, 5 minutes straight to try and get it right. She's a Kiwi and she gave me a hard time about it.
Is she the one that wrote the poem?
Wrote the poem? I don't know.
Not Zach question.
Yeah. Oh. So
no, that's TikTok.
So for the rest of the show, I'm not even going to try to say the trail name because I know I'm going to just fuck
just
it up.
Just say TA.
No, I'm going to just point at you and you're going to say it.
Oh, yeah,
so you'll be a prop in my question.
I'll do my best. Okay. I'll do my best to represent the way the Kiwis say it. So.
Wait, every time you point at him, though, you have to take a sip while he says it.
Totally fair.
Done.
So tell us a little bit about the
Te Araroa. I guess I can only really compare it to what I've done. So I don't know, people listening might've done other stuff that's more similar to the TA than the AT or the PCT. But yeah, overall it's a very young trail. I think it's, oh gosh, maybe like 9 years old at this point. But even in that point, in just talking to people, the rumor going around trails, there are over 2,000 people trying to through hike it this current season, I guess. So it's blown up in popularity, really big amongst the through hikers, probably because all the people in North America are like, I want a through hike, but it's too cold, so where can I go? But yeah, it's beautiful. New Zealand's awesome. The people are really wonderful. Bunch of nice people, a lot of sheep. I think New Zealand has like three or four times more sheep than people, but you know,
that is where Icebreaker is.
Yeah. But yeah, it's really cool. With the trail itself, in hiking it, you can kind of tell that it wasn't really built to be the TA. It was more just a string of existing trails that they kind of link together, or I guess I'll use the TA lingo, the tracks that they link together. And so you get a lot of variety in just how the track is. You know, sometimes it'll be decently flat. Sometimes you're going on just like, you know, two track, dirt roadway. And then there's other times where it's like, you're going straight up like steeper than anything I did on the AT. So, you get a lot of variety in the trail itself, which I thought was really cool. Yeah. Really unique. Keeps you on your toes.
And how many, a bit more basic questions. How many miles is it? What's the weather window and how long does it take to hike?
Sure. So they advertise as 3,000 kilometers, which I think is about 1,800 miles, something like that. It's about 1,000 miles on the North Island and about 800-ish miles on the South End. The weather window, I've heard of people doing kind of like a late winter or into early winter hike. So it seems like there's a longer weather window. But I think that's more, you know, pretty far out there. I guess.
Their winter's backwards.
Yeah. Right? So winter in North America, summer down there. So, I think the majority of people, traditionally it's done southbound SOBO, 90-95% people do it that way. And they usually start in October. I think you can pull off early October if you want to fairly easily. And then they usually tell you, if you try and wrap it up like in March, before the winter, starts setting in and the weather starts getting really bad, because New Zealand's kind of got a, reputation for having really crazy winters or weather. So yeah, stuff can kind of come out of nowhere. And what was the third part of that? Sorry.
How long does it take to hike?
How long does it take? For me, I only did the South Island, which we'll get into more as to why, I guess, later. But that was about 40 days for me. They advertise each island is usually 50 to 80 days on the Te Aotearoa website. So I think that's, you know, pretty similar timeline to like the AT for most people, I guess.
So why just the South Island?
So why just the South
let's
Island?
Let's go there.
Dig into it. I did a little bit of research with it, talking to a friend who had done it in 2015-16. And, you know, I was kind of on a limited time frame. I wasn't exactly sure if I quite had enough time to pull the whole thing off. And so to do that, I was like, well, if I only could do one island, which island do I want to do? And I picked the South Island. The South Island is a little bit more rugged of the two. It's a lot more being out in nature and less like towns and farmland and that sort of stuff. And it's got most of like the bigger mountains. The North Island is a lot more of like farm fields, farm pastures. And then also a lot of road walking. Mm-hmm. In talking with people that I passed that had also done the North Island, you know, I had asked them like, should I do the North Island? Is it worth it? And like, without hesitation, almost every one of them said, no, it's not really
interesting.
Worth it. Because which I thought was, yeah.
I've asked a lot of people about that same exact question, and it's, yeah, there's a pretty good split between people that say, yes, do the entire thing, and some people say, do just the South Island.
Yeah.
But obviously, your sample size had a different response to that.
Yeah. I mean, in all fairness, a lot of them that I saw, they had only just gotten to the South Island from the North Island, so I'm not sure if they had.
The misery was still fresh.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, just from what they talk about, how much road walking it is. Maybe like, I don't know, I feel like if they advertise it more as like you try and bike pack most of the North Island and then hike most of the South Island, I think maybe people would look at it a little differently. But, you know, it's a very new trail. The North Island's more heavily populated. It's harder to, you know, nowadays get land grants to run the trail through places now that people own it. It's not public land, so.
How long is that flight?
I think I did... From Seattle to Hawaii was like 7 hours, maybe 8 hours. And then from Hawaii to Auckland was like 10 hours.
And then how do you get from Auckland to the start of the trail?
So if you are traditionally starting the trail, you got to go north of Auckland to Cape Reinga. I'm sure there's a bus service out there or something. I didn't really look into it because I wasn't planning on doing
right.
it. So yeah, if you're doing that, there's probably a bus service. The South Island, if you're trying to get to the southern terminus where I started in Bluff, you probably are going to fly down to Queenstown or Invercargill, if you know where those places are, and catch a bus or a Lyft from there. It's kind of...
When you say Lyft, is this like local lingo or like actually the app Lyft?
No, I didn't try Lyft. No, just stick your thumb out, I guess. Yeah.
Hitchhiking in New Zealand.
Hitchhiking in New Zealand was super easy. Like everyone's really friendly. So
you just ride a sheep.
Did you have any concerns going into an international hike, or were there any extra steps you had to take because it was something that was abroad?
Not really. I think I had a lot of comfort in it just because, you know, New Zealand's is a Western culture. They speak English as their first language. I know a couple people that live down there already, so I wasn't super apprehensive about that.
Was there, like, visas or anything?
Yeah, so what I had done, based on the timing, I wasn't sure if I was going to work for a month while I was down there. So I actually applied and got a working holiday visa, which is good for a year. So I feel like I kind of wasted it a little bit, but... Mm.
Yeah, how much paperwork is it to get something like that?
It was actually pretty easy. I think it was on the New Zealand immigration website for like 20 minutes.
Interesting.
Submitted it and like they got back to me in like 3 days saying you're approved. So yeah, but I don't know. I think they try and prioritize people under 30 is the rumor that I hear.
Cheap labor.
Yeah. Yeah. And they need it. Like the tourism down there is insane and like they just don't have the population to do all of it.
Yeah.
So like any tourist thing you're going to in the South Island, like it's 90% people from Europe that are working there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Taking a quick break here to bring you a message from a new sponsor to the podcast, Four Sigmatic. Four Sigmatic is a natural superfood company that specializes in mushroom-based drinks that benefit immunity, energy, and longevity and help us live healthier, more enhanced lives. I was originally turned on to Four Sigmatic a couple of years ago by my sister, who's a supplement connoisseur. She recommended that I give Four Sigmatic's coffee with lion's mane and chaga a shot as she had received tangible energy and mood-enhancing benefits above and beyond just her normal cup of coffee. I've been a regular user ever since. Four Sigmatic Mushroom Coffee with Lion's Mane and Chaga is one of my go-to morning beverages before a long day of work. I've actually got a cup of fresh-brewed mushroom coffee next to me right now. Lion's Mane has long been used by Buddhist monks to help with focus during meditation. It's said to enhance productivity, creativity, and focus. The energizing effects of Four Sigmatic Mushroom Coffee are stabilized with their dual-extracted chaga mushrooms that also help to support your daily immune functions. To enhance the chaga and lion's mane, Four Sigmatic adds wild rhodiola root, an adaptogen also known as the golden root. I know what you're thinking. Mushroom coffee? That sounds disgusting. Well, I assure you, as someone who hates the taste of mushrooms, it's the only topping that I won't allow in my pizza, these beverages taste nothing like mushrooms. It honestly tastes great, and it's made with 100% organic Arabica coffee beans. Four Sigmatic makes a slew of awesome drinks aside from coffee, in case you're not a coffee fan or don't drink caffeine. I also really enjoy their hot chocolate, chai latte, and mushroom lemonade mix. And good news, Backpacker Radio listeners get a special offer. Receive 15% off your Four Sigmatic purchase by using discount code THETREK at checkout at their site, us.foursigmatic.com. If you use the link in the show notes or the URL bit.ly/BPRcoffee, we get a small kickback on any purchase that you might make. So please do use that as it helps us out. Again, that's code THETREK at checkout to save 15% off your purchase at foursigmatic.com. Back to the show.
So how did you prepare for it? You mentioned the Oregon Desert Trail, which have you ever heard of that, Zach?
Mm-hmm. We're actually going to have the founder, I don't even know what the executive director, Shira.
Shira, yeah.
Yeah, she's going to be on the show in the summer. So
sweet.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, so I did a bit of a training hike on the Oregon Desert Trail to kind of prep for it. It was about 100 miles or so, eastern Oregon. I did the Owyhee Canyonlands, if people know that section, I guess. But yeah, it was pretty cool. It's very different from the TA, but I've had my eye on the Oregon Desert Trail for a couple of years, and I was like, well, I got, you know, 5-6 days, wrangled a couple of friends in to do it with me and use that as kind of the basis to start moving again.
That's all route finding, route finding.
Yeah, it was entirely route finding, which was really, really different from a lot of the stuff I've done. But also, like, now that I've done it, I'm like, that might be the way to go in the future. Yeah, it's fun to be able to just like, you go where you want to go. Like, yeah. Figure it out.
Did you do anything otherwise preparation? Like, Chance is trying to touch on the physical component of it, but did you do anything in terms of like guidebooks or...
I mostly talked with a friend who had done it. That's where I got most of my information of. I'm kind of at the point now where I tend not to prep too much on the mental side of stuff, just because I feel like looking back on my past hiking experience with the Appalachian Trail, I felt like I over-prepared with it. Mm. And this is the most prevalent when I got to McAfee Knob. And I was like, yeah, this is cool, but I feel like I've already been here. Because I've seen that picture so many times. And, that happened multiple times throughout the trail. So it's like, you know, after that, I was like, I don't want to prep.
You wanted some surprise.
Yeah, like it's an adventure. Like, you know, figure out the first two resupplies and after that, figure it out. I mean, like that's how trail works,
is
at least for me.
Is there a gut hook app?
There is a gut hook app. Yeah. Gut hook app for the TA and some other side hikes in New Zealand. And they also have a bunch in Australia as well. Mm. I use the gut hook app. Super easy, intuitive, same as like the PCT, AT, same sort of stuff. So,
not that you need it obviously for gut hook, but how is the cell reception from the trail?
I actually didn't even bother trying.
Yeah.
I did get a SIM card when I was down there for one of the local the phone plans, but I didn't even really bother messing with it. I've heard it's okay in some areas. The South Island, mostly it's not very good. But I imagine in the North Island it's probably better. Yeah, not as big of mountains and closer to town, that sort of thing.
So you had to get off trail pretty quickly into your hike, right?
Yeah, so I did all that preparation in Oregon and then it, you know, didn't really matter. It turned it out... So I went down to start the trail, and the very southern end of the TA is, I think it's like 17-mile road walk at the very tail end, which is a bit of a bummer, but, you know, once you're down there, you kind of see why. It's kind of the end point's kind of on just like a peninsula, and there's really just like a highway, and that's the only way to get there. So you have to walk this, like, probably the equivalent of like a county highway or something out here, but you got like semis whipping past you and there's no shoulder. It's kind of sketchy. So I was like, well, I don't want to spend time out here also on top of that, there's nowhere to camp. So like, I kind of got to move it this first day. So I ended up doing a bigger day than I had planned on. So that kind of started my foot, started having some problems with all the road walking. Mm. And then the second day, it ended up dumping buckets of rain. And I had, I don't even know, it was like 12-mile beach walk. But it's just like sheeting down rain on me the whole time. And that just compacted all of the sand. And so that was hard as a rock too. And by the time I got to the town of Riverton, like I was limping into town. And
did you take your shoes off for a beach walk?
I mean, I guess you could.
And grab a coconut or something.
it's actually not tropical as much as it might look like it. They have a bunch of plants that look like palm trees and stuff. But it's, they're, I don't know, different New Zealand specific species. But yeah, it's, you know, I limped into Riverton, and that was the first town I was like, yeah, I don't think I can hike on this. Like this isn't good. So then I ended up making the call. I was like, well, I can't, you know, go further away from town as banged up as I am right now. I need to take some time off. And it was bad enough where, you know, I was like, I need to go get this x-ray. Like I legitimately thought like I had stress fractured my foot in 2 days because I'm an idiot and was hiking way too fast. So I got x-rays. Turned out I didn't have a stress fracture, so I was like, okay, well, if it's not fractured, just give it some time. So I ended up spending about 4 weeks in the town of Queenstown, which, if you've never been to New Zealand, like, put that on your list of places to go. Mm. It's the, I don't know who says this, they all say it down there, that it's the adrenaline capital of the world. It's where they invented bungee jumping.
Mm. Did you base jump or anything while you were there?
No. I do not do falling straight down. I'm not okay with that.
A lot of long-distance backpackers are not into the adrenaline sports. There's not a lot of ton of like Venn diagram overlap between the two.
Yeah, they have a luge, which was fun, I guess. I did that, but yeah, no base jump or anything.
How is the healthcare? I mean, is it, do they have universal healthcare out there? How did that work for?
I'm not sure exactly how it works, and don't start buying plane tickets to fly to New Zealand to solve your health problems off of this advice. But what happened to me, I got the x-rays, and once they had kind of proven that, you know, they interviewed me and stuff, and was like, how did this actually happen? And once they established it happened in New Zealand, they're like, okay, well, we'll put in this request to, I think it's called ACC. I don't know what it stands for, but it's kind of like, I guess universal healthcare. I don't know exactly how it works, but that cost got covered for me, so I didn't have to pay anything for that. Yeah,
that sounds great.
Isn't it nice living here?
Yeah, I had health insurance at the PCT, and it didn't even cover me in California, Oregon, or Washington. Yeah.
I'm literally going to the doctor on Thursday to get 6 inhalers because I'm not going to have health insurance.
John's going to have like a utility belt of inhalers.
I'm not bringing them all at once, well, but like should, when I have to mail a new one.
Yeah. It's a new form of bear spray, right?
Yeah. Shoulder pockets for inhalers.
Yeah. But yeah, then, you know, I hung out in Queenstown for 4 weeks. I treated that as like my vacation time, you know, hung out. I did work for Stay in a Hostel. So I met a bunch of people, a lot of Brits in Queenstown, which is really cool. A lot of different cultural stuff. So, and then.
Were you able to discern the difference between the British and New Zealand accent?
Yeah, yeah.
They all kind of sound the same to me. I'm just pathetic.
You start picking up nuance. Apparently in Britain, too, there's a lot of nuance. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. I lived in England, and that makes it even more pathetic. I studied in London for a semester, and I'm not even sure I'd be able to tell them apart.
Oh, boy.
Chance is leaving me
I don't want to ask this because it says number two, which makes me worried.
You should just ask.
Zach wrote, who does number two work for?
Who does number two work for?
I wrote back, what does that mean?
I had watched Austin Powers recently. Is it Austin Powers reference?
Who does number two work for?
Exactly.
You just wanted me to say that?
Yeah. I wanted to see if you would just ask it in stride, but you didn't.
Don't blindly read the teleprompter like you do.
Well, given her her proclivity about poop stories, you know.
Well, sometimes I throw random words into questions and it throws Zach off. It's really fun.
She replaced the with penis occasionally.
Yeah.
She really likes to keep it interesting.
Yeah, it's backpacker really radio. Consistent.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell us a little bit of, so you mentioned Queensland. Tell us about some of the highlights from either the trail or just your experience overall.
I'd say that time in Queenstown was a highlight. It was really cool just to experience a different culture, which, I mean, personally with my hiking in the States, I haven't hiked with a lot of people from other countries. So it was really cool to, like, you know, get that different experience from a cultural standpoint.
Were they curious about the trails in the United States?
Some of them. I did meet a decent number of former PCT hikers. I actually met like 4 Triple Crowners while I was down there. Hmm. So I feel like once you do a Triple Crown, go do the TA, I guess.
Sure.
Maybe they've got like an island there and that's where they're all going.
Yeah.
They just like having
Triple Crown Island.
No one knows about it because they haven't told us because we haven't Triple Crowned.
Apparently not.
There you go. But yeah, so I met a decent number of people that already hiked in the States. I did meet like a couple of Europeans that were kind of interested in it. But it's kind of a different way of hiking in Europe for the most part. They embrace more of a European style, I guess. So, you know, bigger pack.
More cheese. Oh.
Yeah. 80-liter pack. You're hiking like 8 miles to the next hut. And, you know,
everyone's using a Deuter.
Your pack's not heavy. Yeah, you're just European.
I got so many weird looks for having a Kumo. Everybody's just like, how do you do that?
I'm
like,
yeah.
I don't know if you've hiked in the States, but I don't. It's decently common out there now, I guess.
Interesting. Were people jealous or more so just confused?
Confused, yeah. Huh. I've talked to the Department of Conservation lady at one of the national parks, and she was like, "You're not hiking." I'm like, "Yeah, I am." She's like, "Your pack's not big enough." I'm like, "Well, it got me here." So.
So what about the trail itself? Like any particular vistas or landmarks, anything that stood out to you?
Yeah, near the town and lake of Tekapo, there's the highest point of the TA, which is Stag Saddle. And on the way up, if you're coming from town, you have the option to do a ridge walk, or you could walk up the valley. And as you will quickly learn, if you ever hike the TA, that you don't want to walk up the river valley, because it's like, even if you're not in the river, your feet are going to get soaked because the country's a sponge. I don't know what the deal is down there, but nothing drains. So you're just walking through like muddy, spongy junk, and yeah, it's no fun. So you have the option to take a ridge on the way up, and it was really cool. For maybe like 2 or 3 miles, I'm just walking this nice easy ridge up to the high point, beautiful sunset starting to come in. I look over to my left, and Mount Cook's right there. That's the highest point in New Zealand. And it's just one of those like really magical moments. It was really cool. You could see Lake Tekapo off in the distance, which is the bluest lake I've ever seen in my life. It's amazing.
Is that the one that we just shared on Instagram?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, you got to follow Justin's Instagram.
Yeah. It's
here's
so good.
Here's your plug. What is it?
It's my real life name. Justin Helmkamp, JustinHelmkamp. If you search two taps by using the number 2, I'll probably pop up too.
Yeah. He takes really good photos.
Well, thank you.
And if you look at the Trek Instagram, we feature you like every 3 days. So
you don't have to go too far.
Zach's a fanboy.
Yeah, apparently.
That was a really cool. That was a really cool bit. There's also Waiu Pass, which is probably the most infamous pass on the trail. To get up to it, if you're heading northbound, this is where the steepest climb I think I've ever done on a trail comes in. Where the whole time I'm doing, I'm like, where's my rope and belay harness on this? Cause I feel like I'm about to die. But I think it was over 2000 feet in a mile up.
Damn.
Yeah. It was real steep.
It's 40% grade. That's crazy.
Yeah. It was.
How do grades work? I don't know how those percents ever work.
So a mile is 5,000 feet, 2000 feet gain over that, 2 divided by 5, 40%.
Is that how it works, like on the highways when they're like truckers, 6% grade?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've just always wondered that. Yeah. But like a percentage of what? That number? 5,000?
Just a fraction. Just the just number numbers. Of feet of elevation gain over the distance.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Sorry, I've been wondering that for years.
The new segment, Math with Chance.
Things I could have Googled years ago.
Waiu Pass was really cool. Once you get to the top, you have this amazing view down to the valley, and then on the other side, there's Lake Constance, which is, again, another really blue, beautiful lake just sitting in this alpine valley. That's a really cool spot too. So,
what was the wildlife like? Because I feel like I've heard that there's a lot of birds.
There are a lot of birds, yeah. And there's a lot of, at least I found them, like really beautiful bird calls. Everything here in the States, like I feel like I've heard being out. And so it's like you get like the tropical bird sounds, which is really cool. They have a ton of different bird types. They're really beautiful birds too. Like if you ever see pictures of them, like they have some of the most colorful birds I've ever seen. They also have what's called the Kea, which is the world's only alpine parrot. And it's this parrot that only lives on the South Island of New Zealand. And like, it's a bit of a menace. The tourists, apparently they're a very curious bird. They'll like start peeling stuff off your car. They'll steal your food. Like I had one of them try and steal my phone once because, you know, birds need a phone, I guess. But yeah, the wildlife there is really cool.
Will they parrot you? Like echo you? I don't know what the right terminology is.
I never heard them actually like make any sound. So maybe.
I would have gotten hung up on that, trying to get
just
to
sit there yelling at this bird.
I'd been like, who does number two work for? Come on, let's do this.
So you had also mentioned that there was something interesting about the food storage.
Oh yeah. I had an interesting food storage moment, I guess. It's kind of related to the animals. So with New Zealand, mammals are actually like all non-native. Mammals first showed up in New Zealand because of Europeans coming. And so I guess I'll tell the story and it'll reveal itself. So I'm camping, maybe illegally. I'm not quite sure. They're really bad about posting signage as to where you can and can't camp. But yeah, I'm under my tarp and, I wake up in the middle of the night cause I hear this rustling and it's probably like, I don't know, 1 AM, you know, you wake up on trail at 1 AM. You're like, you don't really know what's going on. And I'm looking around and I'm like, oh, well, I don't really hear it anymore. Go back to sleep. 5 minutes later, I hear it again and it's really close. I'm like, what can this be? And I grab my flashlight and I'm shining it around like underneath my tarp out to kind of see where it is, and I don't see anything until I hear a little rustling literally right next to me, and I look down, right next to my butt is a hedgehog. Apparently they have hedgehogs in New Zealand and they will 100% try and steal your food.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it was this tiny little hedgehog, and you know, trying to get him to move was kind of a pain. I kind of move him with a stick to kind of get him.
It took that much.
Yeah, because you know,
really acclimated to people.
Yeah, well, defense mechanism, they just like curl up in a ball and like they don't move. But yeah, I had a hedgehog trying to steal my food and I was like, this is like the weirdest food theft story I think I've ever come across.
Kudos to us for not making a Sonic joke.
Go on, make a Sonic joke.
I actually don't think of one. Was Tails there?
No.
That was so funny, Zach. That was so funny.
Anyways.
But yeah, hedgehogs.
Hedgehogs.
Did you see, so you saw many of them on the trail or was it just that one time?
You saw a lot of smushed ones on the road. So,
Chauncey didn't want to hear that.
Yeah, sorry.
I like hedgehogs.
So you mentioned your tarp and then you walked in here. You've got, you know, sizable camera equipment. You've got a mirrorless camera with a couple lenses and you're able to work that all into your Kumo, which is a 36-liter pack.
Mm-hmm.
Will you just run us through, do you use the same gear across all trails pretty much at this point?
I switch up a little bit depending on what I'm going into. For this one, I did pack a little warmer just because New Zealand does have the reputation of kind of having crazy weather, like it snows in the middle of summer sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to prep for that. I ended up buying actually another base layer when I got down there for base layer bottoms. So it was a little heavier than what I did on the PCT, but fairly comparable.
Is Merino cheaper out there?
I mean, I'd have to do the conversion and with New Zealand dollars to US dollars. Most of the stuff I looked out there was like, it's still really expensive, like $200 uh-huh. New Zealand, which is, I don't know, 130 US.
For Zach like, just loves the math segments.
Yeah. All about the numbers.
Math on the spot with Zach.
Okay, so can we run through some of your gear?
Yeah, totally.
Pack, we talked about the Kumo. What do you got some tarp for yourself?
Yeah, I've been using the Hyperlite Echo 2 with the beak portion that you can add on, but not the inside that clips and with all the bug mesh and stuff.
Yeah,
so,
I've used it before. It's a pretty big size tarp.
Yeah, it's huge. You could totally do two people if you really wanted to.
Yeah. And sleeping bag?
Sleeping bag. I use the Enlightened Equipment Enigma Apex 30 degrees, so the synthetic 30-degree bag.
Why synthetic? We're down on the curiosity.
It's New Zealand's got a reputation of kind of being wet. And, you know, summertime, more often than not, I'll be okay with 30 degrees. And, you know, it was the first time I've really taken that one out for a long stretch. So I wanted to kind of test it out, see how it worked. And it worked pretty good. So I was pretty happy with it.
What about footwear?
Footwear. So I started the trail in Bedrocks, which I had been
Sandal guy.
Yeah. I started getting into sandals last year and I thought, you know, yeah, it's really wet. You know, I'm going to be walking through mud a lot. Sandals would be great. Mm-hmm. But they just don't quite have the same cush for the road walks. And that's kind of what killed me in the beginning.
Right.
So I ended up going with Lone Peak 4s, which don't buy in New Zealand because it was like $190 US
Damn.
In New Zealand
wow.
to buy them.
Damn.
But yeah, Lone Peak 4s did them the whole 800 miles and they're completely trashed. So probably should have got another pair.
And how similar is that to your 2018 setup and your PCT setup?
It's fairly comparable. I've been mixing packs a little bit, but they're all around the same size. Like I've used the Kumo, got a Palante simple pack, and I did the PCT in a Superior Wilderness Designs 35. So about the same size. It's a very similar pack.
Yeah.
PCT and just a PCT. I made my own tarp out of Sil nylon just because I was looking for a project to do over the winter before hiking. But ever since 2018, I've been doing the Hyperlite. And yeah, can't recommend it enough.
How did the DIY tarp hold up?
Well, I only used it like 3 times because it's the PCT. So
everyone says that.
Yeah, Zach was like afraid of cowboy camping.
I'm so scared.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Well, here's the secret. Okay. Ever since 2017, since Hiker Heaven, I have been using a bivy. With catabatic gear, bristlecone bivy, and that thing is super clutch. Like, keeps all the bugs out, keeps all the animals out, provides a little bit more warmth, and you got a view out into the stars through screen mesh. So
I just have a weird psychological thing. I like my cocoon element.
If you want to be cocoon, man,
I gotta bivy, go to hammock. Oh yeah, bivy.
Bivy will cocoon you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Did you bring the bivy on the ETA?
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been using the bivy all the time.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because you said there was, what are those flies called?
Sandflies.
Those are on the TA, right?
Yeah, and they're awful.
Tell Zach about them. They're worse than mosquitoes in Oregon.
I hate bugs.
I will take mosquitoes over sandflies.
Damn.
Yeah, they're
all right, enlighten me. Let's do this. Let me grab my beer here.
Yeah. Sandflies just sound menacing. Like, they're there to fuck up your day. Sandflies.
I'm totally ignorant.
Yeah, so I imagine, like, a very small fly or a very big gnat. That's about the size of them. And they're interesting because they'll land on you and they won't quite bite hard right away. They'll kind of like just dig into your skin slowly and it starts hurting more and more and more. And, you know, you'll slap them. There'll just be blood everywhere because they're like, Jesus. I don't know if they're like sucking your blood or just they're eating
burrowing,
your skin.
Tunneling. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the deal is with them. But they just swarm your legs anytime you stop moving if you're in an area with them. So like it got bad enough to the point where I just kept my rain pants in the outside mesh because it's just, it was bad.
But in a bivy, your head is still exposed.
Not if I zip up all the way.
Okay.
Yeah, if I zip up all the way, I got a screen mesh over my face. So
gotcha.
I don't have to deal with that. But I actually didn't end up tarping that much because the hut system in New Zealand's awesome. Mm. And the huts are pretty great. So.
How far apart are the huts on average?
I'd say between 8 to 15 miles.
Okay.
Through most stretches. There are some stretches when you're like closer to towns, especially on the far south end of the South Island, there's really not much. Like the first hut is like 70 miles in if you're heading north. So.
And how do they relate to the shelters on the AT?
That's like, exactly
significantly.
We're on the same cinnamon wavelength.
I know, that's why I spoke quickly. I was like,
gotta get this
took
one.
It. Gotcha. Yeah.
Let's sit back here.
Yeah. for the most part, significantly better than the AT. If you've ever hiked the AT, there's a decent chunk of them that are like same quality as like the hut system in the Whites. Just they're not manned with people. It's a first come first serve sort of thing. So what you do, you can buy a hut pass. It's like $60 US for 6 months. And it's first come first serve. And it's kind of like, you know, clean up after yourself sort of thing. Keep it nice. And like everybody down there is really good about keeping them nice, which like if the AT was able to do that, maybe the shelters would be in better state. But like, yeah, they're really well looked after.
So they're four walls?
Four walls, roof. Most of them have a porch of some sort. They're really nice. The newer ones especially have indoor water. Yeah, so they'll often have like a gutter catch system that fills a tank. And, you know, you have a water source right there. I mean, you could filter. I didn't.
Are they more comparable to the AMC huts, like in the winter when they're unmanned?
Yeah. Gotcha. Maybe not quite as big, but like same quality.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Wait, so you didn't filter water?
I did some parts. Most of the south end of the South Islands through decent number of farm pastures. So with cows and sheep and stuff I did. Once I got away from that sort of stuff, though, I stopped filtering, which I don't know.
Have you ever had Giardia?
I've not yet, maybe. I don't know. There was an incident on the PCT, but I don't think that was Giardia. That might have been food poisoning.
Yeah, that was Taco Bell.
yeah, knock on wood.
Yeah. I've got a note here about, so you were part of Hike for Mental Health?
Yeah.
Tom Kennedy, my boy.
Yeah.
Love that guy.
Yeah, so I actually found out Hike for Mental Health through the podcast.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and so, you know, in my process, you know, continuing to hike and do all these trips, I have a lot of conversations with my dad about like, you know, is it really worthwhile? And like, the philosophy behind hiking, I guess. I don't know. This is going to get deep.
Let's go there.
But I've started looking at it more as taking a through hike is a pretty selfish thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, you're telling your friends, your family, your work, things you care about to just, I'm going to go do my thing and I'm going to let you all out, you know, hopefully not perish. But, you know, it's a pretty selfish thing to do. And so in thinking about that, I was like, well, how can I still continue to do this thing that I love to do, but also make it worthwhile? Like, maybe not necessarily worthwhile to me, but like try and do something positive while I'm out there, you know, and
rid your guilt of doing something selfish.
Sure. And it was like, you know, I think raising money for a charity of some sort or for trails or, you know, trying to do something, do some good for society while you're telling society to hold on while I go and do this hike is actually, you know, I think that's the best way I've found out to give back so far. And so I started a Hike for Mental Health page for the TA. I'm not really the best marketer, so, you know, but I ended up raising some money. And, you know, the line of work that I do, I think it's really important to be able to combine the outdoors and mental health. And, you know, most through hikers have been in that state with like post-trail depression and stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, it's tough. And being able to figure out more why that happens, I think is a huge positive, while also being able to give back to trails as well. And so, you know, moving forward, I would like for every hike that I do to do some sort of fundraiser and try and do something positive while I'm out there. And I would totally encourage other people to do it too, because it's really not that hard. It took me 15 minutes to set up, and it's just like, give them shit, like try and shout out, talk to family and friends, be like, hey, are you willing to donate? Like it's really not hard to do.
Yeah.
And it, you know, adds a little bit more positivity.
Yeah. Can you tell us how you set one up and what that means?
What
it is?
Yeah. So I went to Hike for Mental Health webpage, did a little perusing and reading, you know, wanted to make sure it was legit. And so it was, I don't know, like 4 or 5 months ago. So I might be a little rusty, but it was, you know, kind of like a create your own fundraiser. And you go to that, you fill out, you know, your information, what you're doing, you give a little bio, that sort of stuff. And then on their end, they create the page for you. And you can just use their link and just share it to whatever social media site you want, email, however you do it. For me, I put it on my Instagram page as the link that you can click. And I just encourage people to check it out and donate. They put some information about the organization as a whole on top of like your bios, to why you're doing what you're doing. And it's just really easy and intuitive to do. And like I would totally recommend everybody to check it out. I don't know 100% like exactly how it works. It's been a while since I set it up. So, but yeah, definitely check them out.
I think more specifically, where does the money go?
If I recall correctly, the portion that they divide up is 80% goes towards mental health research and trying to find causation cure for different spectrum of mental health problems. And then 20% goes towards trail maintenance and trail organizations help improve the trails, keep the trails, you know, working well. Hike for Mental Health as an organization doesn't keep any of the money for their staff or, you know, overhead or anything like that. Like what you donate, it gets donated. It doesn't go to some sort of back alley sort of thing. So, which I think
zero,
is really cool.
Zero admin costs, which is insane for a nonprofit. And Tom Kennedy, who runs it, along with, he's got a couple of other co-founders, are just awesome people. And yeah, I would like to reiterate that it's a great organization.
Yeah.
And you said that it ties into, well, part of the reason you thought it was important was because it ties into your work.
Yeah. For the past year, I've been working as a wilderness therapy guide out on Olympic Peninsula out in Washington. I guess crash course in what that means is I work with teens and young adults who are struggling with mental health problems, drug addiction, behavior issues, motivation, all those, a whole different spectrum of things. Take them out into the woods and, you know, get them away from society for a little bit and help them kind of, you know, as I think a lot of thru-hikers realize, like it helps you kind of reset a little bit, gives you perspective in ways that you hadn't gotten before. And yeah, just try and work with them. We have a licensed therapist that comes out a couple times a week, meets with them. and just, you know, try and help them be better people, I guess.
How long are the programs?
Our program is a minimum 6 week. So they're out in the woods for 6 weeks straight minimum. Usually it's like 8 or 9 weeks that they're out for.
And are they excited to be coming or are they apprehensive?
98% of the time they do not want to come. I think one or two of the students has like ever gone camping before that I've worked with. Which can be tough, you know, trying to get them on board. But, you know, I think a lot of them, by the time, you know, you get a couple weeks with them out there, they start to come around to be like, yeah, I have problems and like, I need help to try and fix them. So it takes a little work for sure. Usually the first week is not fun for anybody.
Sure. How often do you see transformations with the kids?
In terms of like big life-changing transformations, you know, I'd say about a third of them by the time they graduate, you can like, dang, they figured it out. Like they got it down. You know, another, you know, two thirds. I've yet to see a single person come out of the program worse off than when they came in. Right. Like everybody takes something away from it. But again, it's kind of like with everything that you do, the more you put into it, the more you get out of it. Right. You know, some people aren't as motivated as others, which is, you know, it's okay. It's a process. It's not like a catch-all fix or anything like that. It's, you know, step by step, incremental growth amongst themselves. So, yeah.
I think one of the most interesting things about it to me was that in June when you had told me that not all the time the kids know that they're coming.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a surprise.
Sometimes.
Intervention?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Sometimes it needs to be a surprise because if they knew they were coming, they'd just run away from home.
So how does that go?
It's interesting. Sometimes I personally am not the one that does the intervention type stuff. A lot of times parents will be like, hey, let's go shopping or something like that. And then take them to our headquarters where they sit down and have a very important talk with our director and kind of lay out like, hey, your parents think you need to be here. Here's why, you know, fortunately sometimes you don't really have a choice in this, but you know, it's for your own personal growth. So yeah, it can be tough. It can be tough.
What does the program itself look like? Like what's the curriculum or I don't even know what the terminology is.
We call it a curriculum. Okay. For the program itself, there's three phases, individual, group, and family phase. When you start, you're in an individual phase where you spend a lot of time by yourself. You know, you're at camp with everybody, but like you're kind of off on your own, you know, thinking about why you're here, what you need to get out of it. That sort of stuff. Then you move into group phase. If you demonstrate like acceptance for why you're here, where you start interacting with the group, you help cook meals, that sort of stuff, take a little bit more leadership role. And as long as you're progressing with the therapist and what you need to be doing on that end too, then you can move up to family phase, which is kind of like a mini guide, I guess. Someone who has more responsibility can lead the hikes, that sort of stuff, and kind of shown that leadership skill and accepted that they're here and they've shown significant improvement. And then hopefully graduation. Mm-hmm. So
what percentage graduate? Did you say that already?
No, I didn't, but it's over like 90%.
Oh damn.
90-95%. I mean, like we're not out to like make it incredibly hard for them to graduate. Like we want to push them obviously, but right. It's like the goal is to get them to graduate and it's, you know, it's a different requirement for each person, because each person needs something different.
Yeah. Do you ever follow up with them long term, like well after they've graduated, to see how they're doing after that?
I don't personally. I try and keep a bit of a separation, especially, you know, working with teens, minors. I legitimately can't contact them. But I have worked with some adults, and you know, for the most part, I try and stay pretty hands off after that. They'll communicate with our headquarters people. I sometimes get updates there, but yeah, it's mostly, you know, I try and keep that separation. I do the work. I try and do my best when I can. And when I'm not there, not working, I try and keep it out of my mind and have that work-life balance, I guess.
Sure. So this is a pretty, I would say, common or popular sought after job for people after a thru hike,
yeah.
as it's an opportunity to continue, you know, having a career outdoors.
Yeah.
How did you go about finding this job?
So after the PCT, you know, the post-trail depression hit me pretty hard, yeah. And I was back living with the parents, working at REI. Like, nothing's wrong with REI, just retail is not for me. not a fan. And you know, I was like, I need a change. I can't be back in the Midwest away from mountains and like not enjoying life. What can get me back out west outside hiking? So I started looking, you know, what's something that matters, you know, for me, retail, like in the grand scheme of things, retail doesn't really matter.
Right.
So what can I do that something that matters? And so I found wilderness therapy. I had a history of working at summer camps, YMCA. So I was like, well, this could be kind of like that, maybe, you know, not entirely sure what I was getting myself into. And after a Google search, found a couple places, applied, did some interviews, and ended up taking the job out in Olympic National Park. And like, I get to call Olympic National Park my office, which is really cool.
That's awesome.
And did you need like a degree or anything in the field?
It depends on which organization you go with. Some do, some don't. Mine is you do need at least a bachelor's degree, but it's not like, it doesn't have to be like psychology or outdoor specific. So,
did your through hikes help? And help you get the job? Was that an enticing component?
I think that was a big thing. Yeah. Especially when I first started not knowing too much on the psych end of things, having those outdoor living skills were more important for me to be able to give to the group as opposed to, you know, thoroughly understanding brain processes and, you know, that sort of stuff with the students. So, but you grow into it. I'd say it's a job that you have to do it in order to get it. It's kind of like through hiking, you know, it's like, if you haven't done it, it's really hard to understand it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's a good gig. You know, it's not necessarily a career, but it gets me outside and I'm digging it. I'm going back. So, you know, life's good.
And you said there's 6 week programs,
minimum 6 weeks.
So are you working for 6 weeks? Then you get some amount of time off. How does the schedule work?
So the normal schedule is 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off.
Gotcha.
Sometimes, you know, you'll do 3 weeks on and a week off. When I'm going back, I'm doing 1 week and then 2 weeks off just to kind of get back into the rhythm of things.
Yeah.
But the time off's awesome. You know, being able to, you know, have 2 weeks to go wherever, do whatever you want. Like that's one of the biggest perks of the job.
Yeah.
It helps when you live out of your van.
Helps when you live out of a van.
and not to pry too deep, but I know that there's probably former through hikers, backpackers listening that are curious. Does this pay well enough that you're able to fund future adventures from this? Or is this like a lifestyle job because you get to be outdoors or all of the above?
All of the above. Yeah. When you first start out, it's kind of tough because they're not super intrigued with investing a bunch of a paycheck into you. If you're going to work for like two shifts and then dip out.
Fair.
So you kind of got to do your time a little bit for a couple months. It kind of goes along with the lifestyle. You know, when you're working for 2 weeks, you're not spending money on anything. Yeah. So you're saving a bunch of money there.
And are you living in a tent or tents
in Olympic National Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Which, well, it sounds great, but then, you know, it's like
good rain gear.
Yeah. You know, I'm going back next week in February, right, living in a tent on the Olympic Peninsula.
When you say it like that.
Yeah. You got to embrace the suck a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Are you shocked he took the time to take a layover in Denver? He's dragging his feet.
Yeah. The beautiful paradise.
Oh, yeah.
12 degrees.
I can see the moon. Whoa.
He thought it was going to be in the 60s when I picked him up. He's like, I thought it was going to be warm.
Yeah. I mean, winter's not exactly great out here, but this is especially bad.
It's better than Wisconsin. I'll give you that.
That is factually. We should talk about Madison a lot right now.
I was wondering how we almost made it through the whole interview.
Go Bucky.
Yeah. So Madison's the greatest place in the world. No, we won't do that to you guys, even though it's true. Awesome. Do you have any other questions?
No, that sums it up.
I have one more question. Very important.
Okay.
How many times have you been asked in your life, are you James Vanderbeek?
None. I don't
know who that is.
You've never heard that one. I've heard Tosh, like Daniel Tosh.
Oh, shit. Dawson's Creek?
You're old.
Damn it. You don't know what Dawson's Creek is?
I know what it is. It was just like, it was a few years ahead of me. Like, I was watching other things.
You've never gotten James Vanderbeek before?
No. I'll have to look him up.
I'm going to pull it up right now.
Oh boy.
Okay.
I may or may not.
Does he look good?
Yeah. Oh man, he was like the star quarterback in some movie in the 90s.
Oh, I'll take it.
So Zach thinks you look good.
Oh, thanks, man.
I'm just trying to get you back.
I shaved and everything, you know.
I guess.
Close enough where I'm.
I can
I'm okay
see
with
it a
it.
Bit.
All
right. If you grew a beard, maybe, and put on a hat.
John's just having trouble imagining because he doesn't have a beard or a hat in this photo. All right.
Missed out. I cut the big beard like 3 days ago.
Anyways, thanks so much for your time. Honestly, that was a fun tour.
Yeah.
We got to hit on some new subjects there, which
was
awesome.
Fun.
That interview with Justin Helmkamp was brought to you by Greenbelly. In case you're not already familiar, Greenbelly is the maker of one of the most complete nutrition bars on the market. Their meals contain 650 calories each, more than twice the energy of other popular hiking bars. Think of them like cereal bars on steroids. Because Green Belly meals are ready to eat, requiring no stove or cleanup, they make the perfect midday trail meal. Their meals are super light and made with wholesome ingredients, with flavors like peanut apricot, dark chocolate banana, and mine and Chance's personal favorite, the cranberry almond. They taste great and are handmade fresh every week. Chance and I both love the texture of these bars. They're dense but still soft. They're also not too sweet, which is a nice change of pace in the world of sugary meal replacement bars. And good news for you, our wonderful Backpacker Radio listeners, you get an exclusive 10% discount site-wide at Green Belly. Just use code TREK10 at checkout at their website, greenbelly.co. Again, it's TREK10 for 10% off site-wide. Don't wait. This deal's only good for a limited time. Okay, back to the show.
To the Trek propaganda portion of the show. I'm literally going to fly through these because the articles are so well done and there's so much depth to them that I would do no service by actually trying to outline them.
I love when you say this before every time.
This time it's going to happen. Watch me. So the first one is The History of the Pacific Crest Trail by longtime writer Kenny Howell. He's got some of our most popular articles of all time. Came out of retirement to write this one, and it's probably 2,500 words. It's really long, but very well done. Like I said, I'm not going to go into the particulars here because there's no way I can do it any justice. It's going to be in the show notes. Just go check it out. Honestly, I feel like people know a lot more about the history of the AT, the history of the PCT amongst the common backpacking crowd is probably a little bit more of a well-kept secret. Go to the show notes. You'll like this. And then the other one, speaking of the history of the AT, this is about Myron Avery. The title of the article is The Bully Who Built a Trail by Jeff Hutton. Again, this is another really good article. I'm not going to go into it because I'm not going to do it any justice. The one thing I will say about this one is that the Cliff's Notes version is that Myron Avery was a very stubborn, not very well-liked, and probably the most important person in the history of the Appalachian Trail's development. So you should go read this if you care about either of those trails. You should definitely go read either of them, both of them together. Okay.
Yeah, you summed that up pretty good.
Did I do a good job?
That was better than usual.
Yeah. I mean, two articles in, what was that?
Like, I don't know.
That was only like 30 minutes.
I didn't even have time to count.
All right. To everyone's favorite segment.
Woohoo.
You gotta say it.
Oh, patent pending.
Yeah, you invented it, so you get to introduce it. Did you invent it?
Yeah. I came up with it.
Yeah. These are like late night Chance ideas.
Yeah.
And that's late all night. I'll say. okay. So I'll let you start off first.
Don't because, you do that because okay. you have one and I don't.
You're right. I do. And this is the benefit of being the person behind the podcast at the Trek email because I get to screen them and
so
steal,
it's steal so
all
unfair.
The good ones. So I'm not going to take credit for this. This is from Taryn. I'll pull up the email to get more information if she left it. I'm just going to read it. Hey there, brand new backpacker checking in. Just got into it a few months ago with my first 5-day trip coming up in April, Trans Catalina Trail. While researching gear, I found myself looking for something that apparently doesn't exist, but it should. I want trekking poles that have little lights on them for night hiking, either on sketchy trails where you want a larger area illuminated, or on full moon nights where you want to look up and enjoy the view of the trees and then look right back down the path. They could also be used to light inside of the tents that use trekking poles, since those tents tend to not have overhead pockets for a headlamp. That's a good point. The best part is that you wouldn't need to charge these lights or use extra batteries since you're putting force on the trekking poles all day. The magical engineering inside. She does the same thing we do, where it's just like, you know, the science of it will charge
really
it.
Really making a pitch.
For all I know, she's got some engineering chops, so maybe she knows what she's talking about. I mean, I guess like most watches operate that way.
Yeah.
They actually charge based on the kinetic motion. The best part is anyone need to charge or use extra batteries since you're putting force on the trekking poles all day. The magical engineering inside these poles will use that force to charge the lights. As long as you use the poles during the day, the lights will work at night. That's a great tagline,
that
too.
Is.
She's That's thought genius. Of every component.
Our story is going to do so well once we finally launch.
Anyway, I love the podcast. I only found it a few weeks ago, and I've listened to almost every episode. Thank you from Taryn. Taryn, thank you, because I get to kind of claim that as my own patent pending.
That's genius.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
If you hook a battery up to that, too. Whew. Never need to go to town. Just
so
charge
much
a battery.
Force, yeah.
That's genius.
All right, Chance, go ahead.
Well, we were talking about work the other day, how cool it would be if they had those light-up shoes again, like when you were kids and you'd step down and they'd light up.
But those
like,
were so cool for
Ultra's got to get on that game.
9 months, yeah.
Imagine at night when you're stepping down, it's just like you're walking through like a light show.
Yeah. Although,
or like a rainbow.
I feel like you would attract cats. Big cats.
I thought that on the Colorado Trail, like when we put that little red light on Spork at night. And yeah. Like you just, it was like literally like you're shining a laser into the woods.
Oh my God.
I used to get so mad when we put it on.
Like, yeah. Like if you don't like your hiking partner, shine a laser on them.
Why don't we just sprinkle catnip on ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
Who needs bear spray when you got a laser pointer, right?
Literally who?
So is that yours, the light up lights from the 90s?
No. Mine is that I think that they should have some sort of really cool jacket that is already really functional for other reasons, but has like, instead of like how like in the 80s there were shoulder pads, this would have like solar pads, like solar charging pads on the shoulders. And get this.
Yeah, I'm here.
There would be like heated jacket bits in it that would charge via those solar panels. So then when it's sunny, you're gaining all the heat. And then when it's not sunny, all of a sudden it's all warm.
I also feel like your bright ginger hair would be very conductive to the solar energy. So somehow you could channel your red hair into the solar panels themselves and, you know, engineering.
Do you know that because you're also a ginger and you've done this?
I wear hats.
Yeah, I see that.
to hide the grays. I like it.
I found a white hair the other day.
On me or you?
No, on me.
Okay, it's going to be like, ooh, get out of my house, John.
I took a picture of it and I sent it to my mom and she said, yuck. Thanks, Mom.
Sarah always with the perfect comedy timing.
I know, she's so fun.
So does it go in the store?
What?
This is part of the segment, isn't it?
I don't know if mine goes in the store, but yours definitely does.
Taryn's goes in the store, but also mine because I read it.
Sometimes it's hard to think of these.
Yeah.
And like it certainly does help when you have people making them for you.
Two taps, I don't want to shoulder you out here.
Mm. Yeah, do you have any
patent pendings? I was thinking while you were talking, I was like, oh, like, what can I come up with? I'm thinking, so you know those like those hats that are on like the rain umbrellas on top of them too? Like you use multicolor?
Yeah.
Solar umbrella hat.
Ooh.
Ooh.
It'd have to be big, I guess, but...
Didn't we do solar umbrellas?
The one that I came up with was that you would use GPS to position where the sun was, and it would automatically change its direction based on where you are and
oh, yeah, that
sun,
was it.
Which is the greatest idea of all time.
It was okay. You know, it'd be nice if they had little socks for your nose so that your nose wouldn't get cold. Like a little hat
socks for your nose. I think socks not the term that you're looking for.
Hat.
But picture, people are like picturing you with a candy cane nose right now.
Like Squidward. Yeah. No, okay, a little hat. Like you can put on your nose so your nose doesn't get cold. Because my nose always gets cold.
I think you'd have to wrap it around the back of your head. Like
I know,
mask.
There's like no great way of, but imagine there was one where it just stuck.
Well, what if you got one of those hats with the beards?
Like a non-slip nose
fake
hat.
Fake beard.
The fake beard.
Have you thought about growing a beard?
It just hasn't worked out very well for me.
Growing a beard?
Yeah, you know.
You're not trying hard enough.
I don't know what more I can be doing.
You gotta sneeze more.
I've never shaved it.
Yeah. I have one more. I don't know if I'm in love with it. Brown toilet paper. So when you pack out your teepee, one of the things that I think is unsavory about it is like when you pull out the bag, there's like the contrast between the brown and the white. If it's all brown, you're like, you have very little idea of how much doo-doo is actually in that Ziploc.
Hmm. Yeah, no, that's not going in the store. Sorry.
I'm just imagining like napkins you pick up at a restaurant that are brown. Like,
see, that's, wow, brown napkins. That's cool, Zach.
That's
great
the hurdle
mention.
You have to get over is you have to have it like 3-ply Charmin, like feels like a cloud on your bunghole.
Not going in the store.
Well, if Mark Cuban is listening to this and he wants to talk.
For that reason, he's out.
Yeah, podcast@thetrek.co.
Yeah.
Anyways.
That was a kind of a bad...
Taryn saved us there.
Taryn, thanks.
Yeah, we didn't... Chance didn't smoke enough weed this time. All right.
Hey, that's not true.
That's not true. I smoked plenty of weed, damn it.
That's not what I meant.
Wait, I'm getting a ride from you later? What?
Guys, this is bullying and that's not
true.
It's
like on par with like my acid...
Mom, it's not true.
Tried to Tahoe story.
we got a mailbag here. Do you want to take a chance?
Sure. It says Backpacker Radio Acrostic. Is that supposed to say acoustic? Or is that supposed to say acrostic?
I think it is acrostic. I had actually
I was
unfamiliar with it. Apparently it's a term for poem.
Oh, okay. We learned a new word today, everyone. Yeah. Acrostic means poem. Because I have found this podcast, I'll always have a way to Am I supposed to pause when it changes
lines? I think the line breaks. So yeah, you're doing it.
I'm doing it good? Okay.
Yeah, you're doing it well.
Because I have found this podcast, I'll always have a way to come back to the feeling of knocking out miles on the PCT, informative guests and amazing banter, the cinnamon are you sure I'm doing this right?
I'm guessing it's kind of like a haiku in terms of like the syllables.
Do I not know how to read a poem? It feels weird to say.
You got to use your deep voice.
Yeah, it feels weird to listen to, but you're reading it correctly.
Cinnamon Connection never fails to keep delivering entertainment, even when drunk or hungover. Review 5 stars. Did I have a choice? Again, would really love if you'd invite again Katie Gerber and Dr. Emily Kelly's, as they were instantly my favorite guests. Oh, and did Zach hike the AT? Hope you enjoy this acrostic. Keep up the good work, and good luck to Chance on her AT hike. From Meg, Tic Tac Hikes. Whew, that was the hardest thing I've ever had to
Chance
read on this show.
Right now.
I know, my palms are sweaty.
One more reminder to you guys, Trail Correspondence Podcast is out. By the time you hear this, we'll be several episodes deep. This year's class is awesome. That's all I'll say to it. No, I will say one more thing. Go subscribe. And to Chance's favorite part of the show, 5-star reviews. I'm so unprepared.
Yeah, I bet you are.
I really am. I actually don't even know if we have any new ones.
Well, in that case, I'll start.
Cool.
This one says, Hilarious but Informative by Kaya Trepp. I don't think we've read this one.
I think we have read it. That actually sounds familiar.
Really?
Yeah.
It's about the sorority sisters.
Oh, okay. Let's read it.
I actually am laughing like a mad person listening to the dialogue of the real hiking Viking and questions from my sorority sisters. But I suppose in all honesty, their questions answer a lot of my own wonderings. However, these stories and tips are extremely helpful for all aspects of planning a through hike. As a woman, I love hearing more stories and experiences.
Say as a woman?
I thought we'd graze over that. As a woman, I love hearing more stories and experiences
as from a people.
Other women especially. I always get told that it must be crazy for me to want to expose myself out in the wild. What? But this podcast has helped me feel more confident that I know what I'm doing. I'm excited to get out there. I thought expose myself out in the wild. I was going a different way with that one.
Do not expose yourself in the wild. If you do, at least don't blame us. That's true. One day.
You can
one day.
Blame us.
Summer solstice. Yeah. And then otherwise, keep it zipped up. I can't pull up the reviews. My phone is not.
Well, see, I guess you didn't take a screenshot beforehand like I did.
Oh, Chance is always prepared.
Okay. Oh, this one you'll love to read.
Cool.
Here you go.
Is it shit talking me?
Nope.
Oh, yes, I do want to read this. Title, Danny DeVito. So glad these Danny DeVito bits are closing out the show. Keep them coming. You know what? That's from BM Toma 4. You ask and you shall receive. Plenty more Danny DeVito to come.
We were actually talking about it. We were saying that either no one has noticed or no one's mad and we're not sure which one it is. But now we know.
Yeah.
They just love him.
If you guys want your reviews heard on the show, you head on over to iTunes and you can leave us any number of stars as long as it's not 1, 2, 3, or 4. Shout out to our Chuck Norris Award winners,
We
don't tend to do every
show.
We
are literally the worst.
Yeah, maybe even worse than that.
But they love us with our flaws and all.
Yeah, we are highly fallible.
Yeah.
Fallible. Shout out to our current Chuck Norris Award winners, which is Michael W. Hinckley, S11N, Sean, I don't know. That's his rap name, I'm guessing. Sawyer Products, and Travis Smith. So, woo-hoo! Love you guys. You can keep up with us on Instagram at Backpacker Radio, on Twitter at Backpacker Pod, Facebook.com/Backpacker Radio. You can keep up with our guests today,
Justin Helmkamp, aka Two Taps, on Instagram, I guess.
Repetition is key. Yeah. Is there anywhere else that you want people to go to? You mentioned your Hike for Mental Health page.
Yeah, if you go to my Instagram page, I'm going to leave that link on my Instagram profile up for a while. But also, like, I'd totally encourage you guys to check out Hike for Mental Health or other organizations if you're planning on doing a hike on your own, because doing something worthwhile it's really, really cool. So check it out.
Well said. Chance?
You can follow me on Instagram at Juliana_Chauncey. On YouTube or on Facebook at Chance Hikes, and on YouTube at Juliana Chauncey.
Chance did a good video for both her page and the treks, outlining her cold weather clothing for her upcoming AT hike.
Yeah, we spent enough time talking about it.
Yeah, Chance, how are you feeling about your hike?
I'm just like, I wish it were here already. It's really getting hard to sit in a desk until 5 every day.
Yeah,
and like I already put everything in storage, mostly except for a chair and my mattress. So it's just like a barren room. And I'm just waiting.
Are you scared of the climbs?
No, not really. I think they've been like that's the only, like, people keep DMing me and being like, oh my God, you have no idea about the climbs. And it's like, yeah, like, I get it. There's going to be climbs.
Chance is very good at just going with the flow. Chance is a good goer-flower.
Goer-flower.
Bunch of keyboard warriors. I mean, like, it's just walking.
It is just walking.
It's just walking. Don't overthink it.
I mean, to be fair, like, they've gotten me on the stair climber as opposed to the treadmill, so... Congrats, it worked.
You made a difference. You got me. You can keep up with me at ZR Davis on Instagram and Twitter. Okay, that's it for today's show. Thanks for listening and happy hiking.
Bye.
We had some makeup sex in a dumpster out in the back of Wendy's. She incorporated a bun in the lovemaking. She took the dough and rolled it up into a ball. And we were going berserk. She loves that kind of stuff. And I admit I do too.